Good evening and welcome to CEO Night with me, Yimpini Mabunda. My guest tonight is only the second guest to be interviewed during his first 6 months in the job. He's the CEO of Microsoft South Africa, and I was wondering, how am I going to introduce him? So I went to ask Copilot, and I wanted to see how well it knows its people. So please allow me, if it's not you, if it's hallucinating, that's not my issue. So here we go, and I quote, ladies and gentlemen, I'm trying to have an AI voice. Tonight, we welcome a leader whose journey began in Umlazi and Durban Westville University and rose to the helm of Accenture Africa, where he served as CEO for 7 years. After 2 decades shaping industries across consulting, technology, and financial services, he now steps into a new chapter, less than 6 months as CEO of Microsoft South Africa, driving AI and digital transformation with fresh vision. Please join me in celebrating resilience, purpose, and progress. The CEO of Microsoft South Africa, Vukani Mnathi. So, is that you that Copilot described?
I don't think it hallucinated. I don't think it hallucinated. Definitely me.
Fantastic. Good to see you.
Great to see you,
too. And to have you, like I said, turning the tables around. Yeah? So let's start a bit on the lighter notes. I believe you drove yourself here. You turned down our Avis offer.
I didn't turn it down.
Yeah?
I was just here at home.
You could have walked then.
I could have walked.
All right.
My house around
On a serious note, so that was a short trip. But were you listening to anything in the car coming here?
Yeah, I'm...
Podcast, I'm, music, what?
Music.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm a Aretha Franklin kind of guy.
Yeah.
I'm an old soul.
Old soul, eh?
Yeah. I might look young, but...
Which song?
Ever-Changing Times. This,
oh, yeah.
This is actually my best song. You know, one of
those... Beautiful song.
You want to make me sing now?
Oh, no, don't worry. I there are other things I'll make you do, but not sing.
I'd rather do AI.
Yeah. So, I want a surprising fact about you. So, let me just warm you up.
Ooh.
So we had Angelo, like I said, the former, can you believe, his former CEO of Spa, because I've been stepped down about 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Angelo is your height, if not slightly taller. We got to learn that he drives a Mini Cooper. And his team said I should specifically ask him, how the hell does he fit in it? And then he told us the Mr. Bean story. That is true. He takes out the front seat. So what's your story? Maybe. It doesn't have to be with a car or anything, but something unexpected.
Maybe I also take out the front seat. At uni, I used to sleep on a single bed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a single bed is this big.
Yeah.
But sadly, my feet would protrude.
Yeah.
Okay, but because, you know. So I managed to extend the bed with an extra smaller table at the bottom.
So that's where the innovative you came through. Eh? You make a plan, problem solver.
Also, this is a true story.
Yeah.
So basically, I took my, it was a smaller table, something like this, similar, but maybe smaller size.
Yeah.
I put it at the bottom of my, with a cushion.
Yes.
And that's how I extended my bed.
Yeah.
Otherwise, my feet were hanging.
You were making a plan. You were making a plan. People don't believe my story. I never really played sports throughout high school. But when I got to university, I almost became a professional boxer. And I was at UCT. Those who were there with me know. I was boxing at UCT until one day we had a tournament against Fort Hare. Now I know you don't do that because Eastern Cape and boxing. And they reshaped me properly.
Wow.
And then that was the end of my boxing career. But we all have stories. And by the way, talking about that, someone in my team who do the research, I couldn't believe this, whispered to me that you had aspirations long before Black Coffee to be a DJ. Is this true? There's a famous CEO who's a DJ by now.
I want to know who this researcher is.
Yeah.
Because I don't think he or she is hallucinating.
Yeah.
I'm a lover of music.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's, I relax through music.
Okay.
And also I had this idea that it's easy money.
Traveling the world.
Turns out I was wrong.
Yeah, the world. I've never been with family.
But DJing is not easy.
Mm-mm.
Especially those days when the DJing was real DJing.
Yeah. You know?
So.
Oh, with vinyls.
With vinyls.
Yeah.
But it was not to be.
Yeah, yeah.
I guess I was destined for other things.
And how did these other things happen? From that extreme of wanting to be a DJ, you're in Umlazi. I mean, did you even know about computers then? I mean, you end up in a digital space. I mean, it feels like a far cry.
You know, Nyimbin, I'm a rural guy, yeah?
Yeah.
Come from a...
So farming would have been more appropriate.
Yeah, you know what I mean? I come from a village.
Yeah.
I was a top. Midlands,
yes.
In KZN.
Okay.
Not too far from Pietermaritzburg.
Yeah.
It's probably 200 kilometers away from Durban.
Yes.
But more inland.
Mm.
So this is where I grew up. Mm-hmm. I grew up walking 5 kilometers to school, just like most of you here, maybe. Except for the youngsters. You know, the youngsters have it easy. But, you know, we grew up in those kind of settings where I actually used the computer for the first time when I got to university.
Mm.
And it was, remember those blue screens, word processing?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that. Windows 95.
MS-DOS and all of this.
MS-DOS kind of screens.
Yeah.
And that's the first time that I really got introduced to computing. And frankly, I wasn't going to be an IT guy.
Yeah.
This was not the plan.
Mm.
I went to university to become a chartered accountant. And of course, I did a BCom degree. I did accounting. I did tax. I did management accounting. All the stuff that you would need to become a CA.
Yeah.
But one of the courses in there was called Information Systems.
Mm.
It was, in fact, Business Information Systems at the University of Durban-Westville some 30 years ago.
Yeah.
Maybe a bit less. Okay. I'm not that old.
We don't tell our age.
So I enrolled for this course. Turns out I loved it, okay, and I was good at it.
Mm.
My lecturer then said to me, Vugani, why don't you stop this CA stuff and do BIS, and I'll sponsor you.
Mm.
So I said, okay, that sounds interesting. And then she applied herself for a bursary.
Wow.
With NAMPEC.
Sure.
I was sponsored by NAMPEC at university through this lady who was a lecturer because I'd done well. And then I graduated with a BCom degree in information systems. That's kind of how I landed here. And this was, as I say, not so many years ago.
Yeah.
Accenture at that stage was recruiting from universities.
Mm.
They came, they interviewed me, and the rest is history.
Wow, how amazing. And NAMPEC didn't expect service from you.
No.
It was just one of those possibilities.
I tried to find the leaders of NAMPEC just to say thank you.
Yeah.
I couldn't locate them, but maybe they can hear me out through this podcast because I'm thankful.
Some ended at Eskom.
Some ended
at Eskom.
Yeah. No, but this was many moons ago. Maybe this was 1996.
Yeah. But I mean, you make a good point, Vugani, of sometimes almost like trusting someone with your life. Because it's almost like they were shifting your career trajectory and took it upon themselves. Is that what a sponsor does? Or is it something like mentor and you sort of listen to their wisdom and they guide you?
You know, this is slightly contrary to take charge.
Yeah.
Because take charge says you must take charge of your career.
Mm.
But there's also an element of the universe.
Yeah.
That kind of lands you in spaces that you actually never imagined.
Yeah.
I really never imagined myself being here or even in this job. But the history that I've just told you now tells you that sometimes you just have to trust.
Yes.
And sometimes there are people who are, I don't know, guardian angels that look after you, that take you through a direction. Before you know it, your direction has changed.
Yes.
It's going where it should be.
Yes.
Which is, I think...
It's still a take charge message because once you get rechanneled, you take charge of the new direction.
Absolutely.
It doesn't mean that you have to be always in the driver's seat.
Now,
I mean, great leaders are also great followers.
Absolutely.
Mm.
Some of the things that may happen to your life,
it's
also my belief, you know, that you don't always have 100% control over.
At what point in your career, because I mean, then you went on to spend just over 20 years or so in Accenture.
I did.
At what point did it occur to you that I could run this business? These consulting firms are known to hire extraordinary smart people and all competing. So how did you get to the front of the queue?
Are you saying I'm smart?
I'm wondering if you're smart enough to be in the front of the queue.
I receive, Nyimpin, I receive. I joined as a youngster. I was 21, 22 years of age when I joined the company. And the truth is, like you write in your book, any career is about you taking charge of it.
Mm-mm.
And not waiting for somebody to shape it for you.
Mm.
This is the advice that I give to everybody who I'm sponsoring, shaping their career. The point is, you've got to take charge of it yourself.
Yeah.
There is no manna from heaven
that's
going to help you shape the career. So you've got to show ambition.
Mm.
It's hard work.
Mm.
I say this to my children. My eldest is 21.
Yeah.
And I say to her consistently this point, that the power of success lies in hard work. It doesn't matter what industry, what field of study, but success is resting in
craft.
You've got to craft.
Yeah,
I really believe that in this take charge notion that you talk about a lot in your book, there is a big element of owning the next step. Today I look after Microsoft as a CEO. I'm already dreaming what I might do next. Like now, I've only been there 6 months. And hopefully my boss does not listen to them.
Yes. But it could be within Microsoft.
You said to me, you've got 5 years. I said, okay, fine. But the point is, you have to, in your mind, already shape what's next.
Yeah.
But it's not just about you actively shaping it in your mind, but it's also about the steps that you take in your journey to create that next step.
Yeah.
Mm. It's yours to create. The career is yours.
Yeah.
You cannot outsource it to someone else to run it for you. So when you ask me, how did I figure it out in Accenture that I could do the job? There's a gentleman called William Mzimba who was the leader of the business before.
Yeah.
So he asked me at some stage, he said to me, this is after hard work, can you run the strategy of the company? Can you help me create the strategy of the company? This was probably 6 months or a year maybe before I was appointed. And I crafted hard, I put it together, I called all the people and said, then he called me a couple of months later into the business and said, I think you must run Accenture. Did I know at that stage that I was, suppose I had aspirations.
Yeah, sure. Okay.
But I positioned myself sufficiently enough to him and others that I could actually take responsibility.
Yes.
You see what I mean?
And that was an additional responsibility, a day job.
On top
doing the strategy, yeah? Yeah, showing capacity and resourcefulness.
By the way, that's another point. There are people in life who will position you for things.
Yes.
William was one of those for me. So he actually opened the door for me to be where I am, even today, because he saw something in me that sometimes I was not even seeing for, you know, the belief. Someone will have belief, but for anybody to have belief in you, you have got to take charge.
So in this situation, Vukan, you've been already, in the 10 minutes we've been speaking, you've been picked twice. What is it about you? This level of fortune doesn't happen to everyone. So someone said to me, put yourself in a position to be fortunate. Luck plays part of it, but don't leave luck to coincidence.
That's an interesting question. I never thought about it. Now I'm trying to use Copilot.
You've got a chip there.
In my head. Look, it's never one thing.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to create success where you are.
Mm.
You know, you bloom from where you're planted.
Yeah.
One of the reasons Microsoft picked me for the job that I am is because we created success in the company where I was appointed before.
True.
So you always have to ensure that wherever you are, you do great. No? I also think that there is a lot of truth in that for anybody to pick Nyimpini, they must see Nyimpini creating success where they are inviting them to.
Yes.
That's not a coincidence. People look at what you're doing, how you're doing, and they kind of say, can this guy or can this lady succeed here? By the way, I've never applied for any of these jobs. No, seriously, I've never applied for any of the jobs.
You get invited.
Get invited to the role. And it's kind of like, are you able to showcase value sufficiently that people believe that you can do it?
All right, let's segue then to the change. After 2 decades, can you teach an old dog new tricks? Who's the older? Obviously, you've created a level of success and stability that, and understanding of the culture of where you are and so on and so forth. Now, you were invited for the other opportunity.
Yes.
Because many people, I mean, we've got young leaders here. Most of them have worked 10 years, worked in different environments. One of the tough things they always ask me or they write back to me is, when do I know is the right time to make a change? And sometimes you don't sort of initiate it, but you still have to think about, is this the right thing to do? Without obviously divulging what may be confidential, what yes. thought process goes through when one needs to make a career change career like change. You've just done?
So, you know, I was on my 8th year as the CEO of Accenture when I made this change. Mm. I thought in my head about a few things. One was, do I still have different things, different value proposition to give this company? And to be honest, I felt that I have given sufficient, I've given all that I have in my arsenal to the company. And probably the firm could do better with some fresh mind.
Yeah.
With some fresh thinking. Mm, mm. So this is the first thing that went through my head.
Yeah.
You know, can I really substantially add more value
yeah.
to the business? Nobody was firing me.
Mm.
You know, I fired myself. Mm. Don't wait to be fired.
Yes. There's something about a good dancer knows when to leave a stage.
This is true. A good yeah. dancer knows how to leave the stage. I felt that I had given all that I could offer
yeah.
the business. But there are people in the business who are hungry, fresh thinking, fresh mindset, who can elevate the business and take it forward.
Yeah.
So this was the first thing. The second point was about my own personal career growth, which is to the point we made earlier, that you always have to kind of figure out what's next. I knew that I needed to take the next leap of faith into yeah. something else. Mm. I didn't know what it was, but I had an idea.
Okay.
And my idea was to be in the forefront of AI transformation.
Okay.
And therefore, I was actively looking for opportunities in this space so I can be on the cutting edge, I can be on the frontier in this space, which I believe is fundamentally changing the shape of the world.
Mm.
So how could I play that role in South Africa was the question behind me.
Okay. Now, that makes a lot of sense. Now, you've just segued nicely into the AI world. There's a question that, how do you know someone was in Davos? They tell you.
Oh.
So when I was in Davos, yeah. you know.
Now we know.
AI was really in center stage. And of course, your global CEO was there.
Yes.
And many others, Elon Musk and Google and all of that, right? And there was a lot of debate around AI. And one of the things I'm seeing, even like in the last few months, major corporations are changing their business models
yes.
and restructuring their organizations, reducing workforce, especially administrative roles, saying that because they are getting better solutions and more productivity from AI. I mean, Block did that, Amazon did that, IBM did that. The list is endless. And yet, we had been reassured before to say that you can work alongside AI. It's not here to replace you. But what we're seeing, it's almost like it's doing people's jobs even better. What is the jury? What are you seeing? Because, I mean, I get a lot of professionals saying we're scared of this thing. We don't have job security. We don't know what's going to happen to us.
Mm.
Is it for the good or not so much?
Look, Yimpini, the bottom line is, this is why really I wanted to be in this AI revolution. Because
yeah.
AI is an amazing opportunity for everybody and for the world. But it is also a risk. What you are saying is true. Because unless I, Vugani, I get myself to be the frontier in AI,
yeah.
I will be replaced. Which therefore means that every single person has to think about the jobs that they do today. Because the jobs that you are doing today isn't going to look the same tomorrow.
Yeah.
This is guaranteed. You can argue with a hand.
Yes.
But the bottom line is that the jobs are going to look different.
Yeah.
Now, there are some jobs that will be, to be quite frank, to your point, replaced. There is no doubt about this. The question,
it's happening already.
It's happening already. The question is, what do we as South Africa do about that?
Yes.
Now, before those people are replaced.
Yes. And there will be new jobs created at the same time.
But this is exactly the point. So, yeah.
So it's a shift.
You know, I always make this example of the 1940s when the combustion engine was introduced.
Yes.
To replace the horses
and
the carts. Okay. The people who were running logistics then were putting hands on their heads thinking,
it's over.
What is over? Yeah. What do we do? Mm. Today, you cannot think about transporting anything from here to Lord knows where without a combustion engine.
Yes.
And this is how we should think about artificial intelligence. The fact is, this technology is transforming how we do things as humanity.
Yeah.
So it's either you are in the journey or you are replaced.
And practically, how do people get in the journey? Is it really about reskilling themselves? Is it about thinking, broadening what they know and do? Because these are the leaders who are asking the same questions. How do I stay relevant?
Let me put it to you this way. For me and you, who are general workers and employed in industries, it is about reskilling ourselves.
Yeah.
In the age of AI, so we can execute things that machines or agents cannot do.
Yeah.
Because it is true that while agents will be able to do a lot of things which are mundane, which are repetitive, which should naturally land themselves in the machine world,
there
are also a lot of things that machines cannot do.
Yeah.
So the question is, how are you preparing yourself for the world where some of the stuff that you do today no longer needs to be done by you?
Yes.
But you prepare yourself to this world where actually we require you.
It can also be for the better.
Absolutely.
Because there are a lot of things that we do that we're not so efficient in.
Precisely.
You know, it's not a good use of our time. And if AI can help us with that, then we free ourselves up to do bigger things. So there's an advantage in that. That is why it's in working alongside it and making you look good and perform better.
Absolutely, Nyimpin. You must read the book called Human Plus Machines.
Yeah.
We have a world of duality where humans are living alongside machines.
Yeah.
The work that you today are able to do, which can be done better by an agent, does not necessarily mean that there is no more work that you can do as a human.
Yeah.
The question is what? Mm. You've got to know this, and you've got to be inquisitive. You write about it here. An inquisitive mind is a surviving mind.
Yeah, absolutely. So you had the famous Microsoft AI tour, which, thanks for the invite, unfortunately I missed it. But give me three key takeaways which are relevant to the people sitting here. Because, I mean, I believe it was super exciting
and
very, very successful.
It was really a fantastic event by many measures.
Yeah.
The first one was that the realization is happening, finally, that this is, in fact, the year of AI. Mm. And there is no CEO that I speak to who's not asking me, come and show me how I can differentiate my organization to be a frontier.
Yeah.
So the conversation has shifted from, hey, come and do a little pilot with my HR or my finance function. The CEOs are thinking very deeply about how to use artificial intelligence to improve their overall business. Okay, so this is the
business
big,
imperative. Yeah.
This is the big, big, massive change in the AI world that those people who were in Davos would also share with you. Would also share with you that actually the aha moment has hit.
Yeah.
The second takeaway from me is a huge realization that we as a nation have got a lot of work to do.
Mm.
This is a survival activity that we that we as leaders have got to drive and really implement.
Mm.
Because, you know, if we don't skill our people up in AI, we're going to exacerbate our 30-odd% unemployment.
Yeah.
By a significant margin.
Yeah. Yeah.
In order for us to not have that major challenge in our country, we are, for the first time, realizing, oh, we've got to do something significant.
Yeah.
The third realization, I'll stop there, there's many more.
I asked you for three.
Yeah. While there is a aha moment, the know-how is still lacking, generally speaking.
Yeah.
Now, there is no expert in AI.
Mm. Mm.
If anybody said to you they were an expert in artificial intelligence today,
You must ask them, when do they become experts?
We're all learning. We're figuring it out.
We're all figuring it out. Okay, so the truth is that the opportunity is right now.
Yes.
It's ripe right now for us to take this thing, the scruff of its neck, learn as much as we can as leaders, and as South Africans in general, because it's happening.
Yeah.
Whether we like it or not.
Yeah.
Now, we better take advantage of it or allow it to surprise
us. But we lag behind, and to your point, we already have... We are in the top 10 unemployment rates in the world. And
by the way,
we don't want to make it worse.
By the way, Yimpini, let me tell you this, which is a very important point to make in qualifying. There are organizations which are really doing amazing things.
Yeah.
In this
space. In Zanzi.
Here in South Africa.
Mm.
And you will see some of them will launch in the next month or so. Stuff that they are doing, which I cannot speak about them, obviously,
sure.
But these are exceptional pieces of application of AI.
Yeah.
In the space where we are improving humanity, as opposed to taking away from human. So
yes.
I think we've got to think about it this way so that we can really drive it in a positive mindset.
Yeah, and there's lots of positive examples of where AI is used to improve humanity. And I know that you've been involved in some of the organizations for digital skilling as well.
I am.
Know, because we need to get ahead of that. We are meeting during really turbulent times in the world, very difficult times. Geopolitically, we know what's happening with the Middle East and all of that. And it's not just the recent stuff. There's been tariffs, uncertainty coming up. And then, of course, we've just come off COVID not so many years ago. It feels like VUCA is on table charge. What have you learned that you can share with our young leaders here around leading in uncertain times or turmoil? And to your point, there's no real precedence in some of these things because it's happening too quickly, back to back.
Absolutely.
And then we've got AI and it's improving a lot. There's just a lot. But what would you coach someone that is your mentee or a coachee around leading during this period?
You know, I remember during COVID. COVID was the worst for me.
Yeah.
Because I was a new leader. I had just been appointed as CEO of Accenture.
Mm.
And we had to have everybody work from home.
Mm.
No experience. Mm. We've never done this before, you know. But my key lessons is that, you know what people look for in times of uncertainty is the truth. As a leader, the expectation is that, in fact, people know you don't know.
Yeah.
Some of the things.
Don't pretend to know.
Nah, but don't pretend you know.
Yeah.
Because they will see right through that.
Mm.
So people expect you to show up and be honest with them.
Mm.
And if you don't know, it's okay to say you don't know as a leader. Nobody expects you to be some kind of a superhuman.
Mm.
My lesson is that people appreciate you coming across as a person who will absolutely share with them the truth. And honestly so.
Mm.
The other one is that there will always be uncertainty. We live in the world of uncertainty.
Mm.
So being versatile as a leader, so when things hit, you can work out quickly what to do next.
Mm.
And by the way, I found that working very closely with my core leaders in the business, right? My leadership team cooperate with them, and people at large inside my organization actually does amazingly well because you even get ideas that we never had.
Yeah.
You know, that we as the leadership team couldn't produce.
Mm.
And our people said, what about this?
Yeah.
What about that? So I think inclusive leadership is super important in terms of navigating tumultuous time. And then I'll say finally, I learned the hard way, is that in times of difficulty, business requires empathetic leaders.
Mm.
You know, right now there is war in the Middle East.
Mm.
And I'm on a call every day with my leadership team. Well, this is now the MEA, Middle East and Africa leadership team. It is incredible to watch how my current boss applies empathy and understanding of this, because people are scared.
Yes.
They're really scared. You know, he's Lebanese. So he says to me, listen, Vukan, in Lebanon, in Beirut, this is nothing. Because they lived in war
of course,
their lives.
Yeah.
But he applies so much empathy to those who he is leading because that says, oh, okay, he gets us.
Yeah.
And therefore, we are okay to be with him and follow the leadership that he's driving because he applies empathy. For me, this is very important.
So it's down to the people agenda, which sometimes there's this perception that technical people don't always lead with heart, which is not true. Because what I learned about you as well is that you've got this Friday People Day ritual. Does it still exist?
Not at Microsoft.
I was going to ask you, why has changed? You
know, I think, so what happens on Friday? Do you hug and stuff?
No, actually, I try and make it an everyday thing.
Yeah.
The people, you know what I do? I like to have smaller sessions with our people.
Yeah.
Because they tell you the truth. They tell you what's going on.
Yeah, yeah.
They tell you which boss is nasty to them.
Yes.
They do. Yeah. They tell you how crap you are in your leadership.
Yeah. You need to skip levels. Yeah, all levels.
They generally are unhinged.
Yes.
Okay?
Yes.
And I encourage them to be... I encourage them to be unhinged.
Yes.
Because when they do that, then they give you the opportunity to reflect
yes.
and figure out what to fix in the business. Yeah?
Very
so
important.
Instead of it being a Friday thing, it's kind of an everyday thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
No, it's very important. We have a new section here. You refer to the unemployment, you refer to the skill, there's crime. There's so many things that we're struggling with as a country.
Yes.
So we've introduced this section called Social Responsibility Section, where we invite our CEO guests to comment on a national issue that we think is affecting the country. So you may have read a few weeks ago that we have a real, real problem with gambling mm-hmm. in the country. They did a research to find that actually an increasing portion of NSFAS money that has been given to students is used for gambling. Capitec and ShopRite also said a huge portion of what they pay out or what gets collected as social grants, 17 million people, now up to 28% is gambled back. So gambling, to give you a perspective, grew, revenue of gambling grew by 29% year on year to 1.5 trillion in South Africa. In a country with such high unemployment and low household income, this is becoming very, very difficult. Any thoughts as to how this problem could be tackled and maybe there's an opportunity to use technology for good? Because we see it in our communities. I grew up in a village like you and there's slot machines every corner. Not sustainable.
Slot machines in your village?
Have you been to a tavern lately? Have you been to the tavern lately?
I gone. We need to
But it affects, it includes the lottery. It includes the lottery and everything. And then a lot of it, apparently, it's online, 60%.
No, actually, I'm being facetious about this question, Nyimpini. But what you're presenting is a real problem.
Mm.
And actually, it's quite a personal problem to me because I've got a family member who's addicted to this thing. And it is very sad when a family member comes to you and asks for, can you borrow me 10 bucks? Or 50 bucks, because he wants to go gamble it.
Mm.
Or he just wants to buy a sandwich. Doesn't even have money to buy a sandwich.
Mm.
So this is how bad the situation gets, yeah? I've immersed myself into the psychology of it. This kind of a downward spiral that people get into and try thinking, if I put this last 20 bucks, maybe I can make it. Never mind a million, just like, who knows, maybe 1,000 bucks.
Yeah.
Then I can survive for a week, then it's gone. It's like, what do I do now? Let me phone my brother and ask for 50 bucks.
Mm.
But on a serious note, I think there is a lot we can do here.
Mm.
First is that we can use technology in the right way,
mm.
especially artificial intelligence, because to educate,
mm.
I think there is a fair amount of education and reaching as many people as possible.
That is true.
That are, but we can also apply means to figure out who are the people that are addicted because they gamble here.
Yeah.
So you can now figure out
some patterns here.
Yes, you can look for some patterns and actually drive a solution.
Mm.
I'm thinking out loud. That could help in isolating that behavior so we can say, hey, there's a problem here and maybe this is the pathway that you can go for to seek help.
Absolutely.
I don't have, let me call it a
silver bullet.
Yeah. A silver bullet for the problem that you're presenting, because it's such a huge problem. Yeah. But definitely technology can play.
No, absolutely. I mean, look at how technology has democratized even education. People now can get to zero-rated sites and do their revisions and so on at the time, even when, like, I come from Limpopo, where the classrooms have been flooded. And you can continue online for those who can get zero-rated stuff and so on, and online teaching. There's a lot. I mean, healthcare information and all of that. And I do think that it's important that that message gets across to say, net-net, technology is good.
Technology can, in fact, you know? I'm thinking you could even democratize provision of psychological support.
True. Through, there are many people who would volunteer to help and give the psychological support.
Who can volunteer to help.
Yeah.
And you can now make it available online.
Mm.
Because many people have technology.
Yes.
In order for you to gamble, you need a phone that could... But the same device can then be used to help you.
Yeah.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Lindo Gushe. I'm here in my capacity as a non-exec director of a nonprofit. In March 2025... there was a briefing with the president, President Ramaphosa. It was announced that Microsoft was going to make a $5.4 billion investment specifically in cloud and AI infrastructure that's building on the $20 billion over the past 3 years. What is your opinion and how much of the budget of that $5.4 is being spent with regards to onboarding people onto Copilot?
Let's clarify. There's $5.4 billion, no, billion rands, not dollars. $5.4 billion which Microsoft is investing in South Africa to extend the capacity of the data center that we have locally. So this has got nothing to do with skilling. Mm-hmm. It's infrastructure budget that we're using to build our new additional data centers in country. Right. But you're asking the question around what our initiatives are on skilling our people. Our logic here is that we have to use every platform that we have available in the country to help as many people as possible. First, to understand what AI is. There's people who don't even know what artificial intelligence is in the country today. So we're rolling out fundamentals, AI fundamentals, where we decided we will train 1.4 million people this year. And to do this, we announced at the AI tour.
Mm-hmm.
We are partnering with the SAPC on the SAPC Plus platform.
Mm.
And we've already done the enablement of all our courses in AI fundamentals, that if somebody who does not have a clue about artificial intelligence can go on a zero-rated site here on your phone and learn. But now you're asking more the next steps post-fundamental, which is how do I get a developer who maybe is not very skilled or super skilled, but can utilize GitHub Copilot to learn how to code and be a proficient programmer. So here we have created a program which we funding through Microsoft Elevate.
Mm.
Microsoft Elevate is an initiative which we created inside of Microsoft, which is about skilling the next generation of technical skills in our country. And we are rolling this out through NPOs. They are providing the skilling initiatives to the right level of, we've got beginner, we've got intermediate, we've got, you know, guys who are multi-certified, to actually be able to make use of the capability that we've got to be the best developers using artificial intelligence in the country that we're doing right now.
My name is Zolo Makubalo. I am pharma adjacent industry. So my own interest is health. And the healthcare system in South Africa. I just wanted to know your thoughts in terms of how AI can help support. And I know that, as you said, most company CEOs are looking into that. I just want to know your thoughts, if there's anything really, if you've thought about in terms of health and healthcare systems and government.
Another super important area of our country, which frankly needs a lot of help.
Yeah.
Healthcare. So I spend a lot of time in healthcare personally. I'm quite familiar with what goes on in this space, not from a pharma side, but more from health provisioning standpoint. The reality here is that the application of artificial intelligence is at a significant scale in the health sector.
Mm.
specifically. Last November, I spent a lot of time with M42. M42 is the healthcare provisioning organization for Dubai. Let's say UAE.
Okay.
So I was in the room with them where they were spending time to think about, these are doctors,
yeah,
to think about how can they use artificial intelligence with us in the room, actually facilitating the conversation.
Okay.
In the provision of healthcare. How can we diagnose better? How can you utilize artificial intelligence to find solutions that would take hours and hours for doctors to figure out? With the power of AI, you can figure that out in a very short space of time and therefore reduce the amount of time that a patient actually spends in the facility. Because what actually costs a lot is how long do you and I actually spend in the facility once we get sick?
Exactly.
But most importantly, how can we prevent? Yeah, because the point is, if we can figure out that Vugani, I'm a big fan of
wearables,
because I want to know what's going on with me.
Yes.
So I wear this device here.
Yeah.
Because it tells me, hey, you didn't sleep very well last night.
Yeah.
You know, and by the way, but tonight you need to sleep by 9 o'clock, otherwise you don't recover. But also it tells, I know 3 days beforehand if I'm going to get flu. Just the numbers spike up. You can see on the product.
Yeah.
And then I start taking measures.
Yeah.
So the point is you can prevent. Okay, so preventative care, but also most importantly, using the tools that we now have to figure out how can we improve the provision of healthcare and do it at a fast pace.
Yeah, I mean, talking about wearables, I think in the latest results, the CEO of Netcare said they are introducing wearables for patients. Yes. So that they can visualize and read exactly what's going on with a patient and be able to respond faster.
But this is
and more efficiently, yes. So that's very, very good.
My name is Bongani Hlatjwayo from Mesa InterEd. How do employers get, you know, the employees to start using AI firstly, but how do they also get them using it very safely?
The answer is they are already using it. 90% of you here have already used AI in one form or the other, including you, sir. In fact, when we ran our own tools in Microsoft to figure out what we're doing as an organization, we found out there were 14,000 agents which were already running inside of Microsoft that we didn't know about. Now, it may be no surprise that in your organizations today, you're already running agents that are assessing data, they are doing certain actions which you don't know of, that are often because the person who created the agent has left the company. And the agent continues to do what it was instructed to do. So the point is, people are already using agents. They are already using AI. What is missing is the structure, which needs to be leadership driven. Organizations, when they implement artificial intelligence, they do it in a structured way with the right fundamentals in place. Fundamentals means, do we have the security controls that you spoke about? Who is accessing what? Who is doing what with our data in the company? That do we know about it, yes or no? If we don't know about it, how do we know that they are doing things that they are supposed to be doing? So the foundations need to be in place. So the leadership, data governance, security, choice of tools, etc., is the responsibility of leadership. The second part is enablement. How do we enable the people to use it right? In other words, what products are they producing out of these AI solutions? Are they producing the things that we want them as a company to produce? Yeah. Or is somebody busy creating some tools that is not necessarily what the company wants out there? So you see what I mean? A third aspect is, how do you build agents and how do you control them? Because remember that agents are like other employees, like me and you. Where I'm employed by the company today. I don't have my badge. It's got the number.
Yeah.
It's got a number, 100 whatever. This number is what is how I'm identified inside the company today. So that when I execute certain things, I log on to my PC, I do this, I run that report, whatever, the company knows.
Yeah.
AI agents are no different. They are like you and me. We need to know these agents. We need to know what they're doing.
Yeah.
We need to know what data they're accessing. We need to put security controls around them. In as much as you can't go into your workplace and open up the HR department's door. They stop payroll.
Yeah.
Payroll says, hey, stay away. And your card does not open that door. See? Which card can you not open in the world of AI?
Yeah, wow.
I mean, which door can you not open in the world of AI?
That's a very practical way of putting it, yeah.
Exactly. Mm. So we need to figure out, we need to teach our people how to write and build agents in a way that produces value for the company. Okay, so it's already happening.
Yeah.
We just need to put guardrails in it, educate people so that they do the proper thing to benefit the firm as opposed to spending time doing what you don't know.
Hi. What white-collar jobs now have the potential to be automated by AI? Yeah, what's Microsoft's stance on that? Is it building like a million agents or is it building like AI guard, for the lack of a better word?
I don't know what is the percentage of white-collar workers that will not have jobs tomorrow. That's the honest answer. I'll use AI to ask the question. To be frank with you, I have not done that exercise. But what I can tell you to your second question, which is, how do we think about it? We believe that in the next 3 years, there's going to be a plethora of agents that will be swarming around the world in some data center somewhere. And this is why it's so important to manage and control them well. You see, what happens is the following, is that if you are executing a piece of work, you're not going to have one agent that executes the piece of work. You can have multiple agents that you string along in a workflow to produce an outcome. Let's say you are running a 7-step process, for those of you who grew up in the process world, and each of the steps is in fact an agent. That means that you're going to have 7 agents that you string along, that finish a task and pass on the output to the next agent, that will do something and pass on the output to the next one, etc., until the final task is produced. Mm. Yes?
Mm.
So how we think about it, the logic that we're applying is that, first, you have to be able to control the agents. You have to know which agents does what the output is of that agent, and what data is it accessing, what security needs to be applied to that agent, what can it do, what can it not do. In Microsoft, we've built a product for this. It's called Agent 365. Agent 365 does not just manage Microsoft agents. It manages any agent. Mm. Because some agents will be Microsoft, others will be this, others will be that.
Yeah, it needs to be agnostic, yeah.
It's got to be agnostic, but you've got to be able to string along your agents so you can be able to know what they're doing and what output they will produce.
Yeah. Yeah.
You also need to give agents context. If you're running a pharma organization and you want to execute a diagnostic exercise on a patient, for example, you need to give context to what you're doing in your organization so it knows that, okay, by the way, this is Vugani. Vugani is employed. He's supposed to do this. He cannot do this. And once you have given it this context, when you execute the agent, it already knows what to apply.
Yeah.
And then the last part is you must manage security on your data side, as well as security on the agent itself. For example, when the agent, like I mentioned, let's say I resign. I've got an agent today to respond to my emails. When you write to me, an agent will respond to my email.
Yeah.
I have another one that's sitting right here next to me who's my business manager.
So they also come in human form.
Also come in human form.
Yeah.
She also responds to my emails.
Yeah.
But the point I'm making is that if I have an agent that responds to my emails, okay, and it knows how I write. It knows how I, if I'm upset, if you write crap to me, I probably respond in the same way. You know what I mean?
Yes, yes.
So I'm just making that up.
Yeah. But
you see where I'm going with it? So it knows how my tone. So it writes back. And then I resign. Let's say for whatever reason, Microsoft does not kill my email. And email is still coming in, continue to come in. The agent doesn't stop.
Mm.
Unless we've secured it enough that when we trigger a resignation, all the agents, the 30 of them that were written by Vugani, are retired. So you've got to create a control plane for these agents so that you secure them, you know what they're doing, they are running in a structured way that you know what, at the end of the day, what value they are producing for the business. That's the way to think about it.
My name is Sitlobo Kotsohai. I am a strategy consultant. I work for myself. And what do you see the role of companies such as Microsoft and Oracle and SAP and other companies such as Salesforce? What do you see them evolving into? Or rather, let me just ask you specifically, how do you see Microsoft's role moving into the future, given the fact that this is going to be an increasingly democratized space?
Here's what's happening. Maybe let me bucket them in three ways. I was just thinking of the right way to answer you. So the first one is that coding is going to be an easier job. In fact, it already is.
Yeah.
If you're using Copilot, GitHub Copilot today as a programmer, anybody using it here? Okay, there you go. Okay. So these guys know. You probably are saving at least 30 to 40% of your time. Because when you say to a Copilot GitHub AI, you say, write for me a piece of code that's going to do it in English. And it looks at what you've written before in your code and what's coming in next, and it closes this gap for you that you had missed.
Yeah.
Or you say, for example, hey, I'm unsure about this. Can you rewrite this part for me? And it just does that for you, right? You write it in English. Coders or programmers do not necessarily now need to do what we did at university. I coded in C, not C++, no, not C#. There were no classes defined for you. You had to define them yourself. Here now we're talking about a product that writes code for you. You just need to give it in English. So this is the first part. This is just a creating significant improvement. I mean, anybody who's a programmer who's not using this is just like, I don't know what's wrong with you. Seriously, I mean, like, there should be no reason for anybody not to use this because it is so sensible.
Yeah.
To if you're smart and you want to save time. Mm. The second part, which is the question around what do I see around what AI will do for, let's call them software as a service products. You mentioned SAP, you mentioned the various companies. I don't have a crystal ball, but I can tell you that every single one of them right now is building agents inside their products to execute things that otherwise would have taken you 10 different things to execute inside the product. You're now going to initiate, maybe by voice or by text, hey, I want to pay invoice X, Y, and Z, go do it for me. And it executes all the stuff for you in the background through an agent. This is the future.
Yeah.
Cannot speak for them because I don't know what they're doing, their strategy, but I can tell you my logic tells me that. The software, the service organizations are looking into how to apply agentics in their main product to improve efficiency. It is my view that fundamentally the work of a technologist, whether it may be in coding, it may be in releasing products, it may be in testing, it may be in config, will significantly be improved by the use of AI. Because you can tell an AI product, an AI agent, to go and configure this server in this way to do one, and then it goes and does it for you. You know the script that we used to run? Run the script, and then when you're done, you run the next one. You can now create an agent that figures all of that out for you. You can have it figured out on your behalf. So, Nyimpini, the point here is that the value gain on this type of form of technology is just endless.
I mean, and the point is that, you know, for business leaders sitting here, reinvention and reimagining your business is the name of the game, whatever you do. Who would have thought that only after 5 years, Checkers 60 would be a 90 billion rand business that has seen other retailers struggle? And the car manufacturers who are today making 95% of their vehicles being combustion engine are saying that within 10 years, it's going to be 90% being EV. And that is a total change in how a vehicle is made. So whatever business, I mean, I sit on the board of a real estate company. The banks are shutting down and reducing size of banks because people are no longer going to branches. So you just have to keep on reimagining and saying that there's a good book called The Phoenix Encounter, by an INSEAD professor. And I think what it talks to is bend down your business and rebuild it again. Absolutely. Just imagine if it's gone.
Yes. Imagine in government if we didn't have a business process that's defined today. If you just had the law and think about how might you implement that law using AI as a base product that you have. You probably would cut out, I don't know, many different steps in the process.
Yeah.
Because you have the tools today that fundamentally shift what we imagined 20 years ago.
Yeah.
So that's your point. I mean, it's not the question of improving.
Mm.
It's a question of turning the thing on its head and reimagining from scratch. Yeah. That's what's happening.
My name is Mpumi Ngaba. I'm a sales transformation lead at Vodacom, also ex-Accenture, so I can attest to Vugani's leadership. My question is around AI readiness. What are the conversations that you are having with the leaders in big corporates, particularly the banks and the telcos, around ensuring that we have the necessary culture shifts and we have the right systems and investments in place for a future of AI?
The kind of conversation that I'm having, first, I mentioned to you that this year is the year of real, it's the aha year.
Mm.
So leaders really are thinking deep about what this means for their businesses.
Mm.
That's really what's happening, okay? Are the companies ready to adopt artificial intelligence at scale? Some are, some are not. This is the truth. The organizations that are spending time enabling leaders to really get it are the ones that will make a significant improvement, because this is a leadership journey. It's not bottom up. If you allow it to be bottom up, for sure you will create chaos. So this must be led from the top.
Yeah.
The banks today, after Davos, are...
Look what I started.
But it's true, right? They're really thinking long and hard about what this means for them, okay? And therefore, they're making investments.
Mm.
I can tell you that I'm launching very soon a masterclass program in partnership with a local university to teach CEOs and C-suites.
Yeah.
C-suite.
Much about, needed.
About how to execute in this new agentic area.
Yeah. Okay? Much needed.
This is very important because the leaders need to get it. Eh?
Yeah.
The second point I can share with you is that many organizations are wondering about the technology.
Mm.
They're spending a lot of time on the technology space. How do we enable it? How do we create an enabling environment for our people to not wander off and do their own things?
Yeah.
But to work within the confines of what we are helping them set up and shape as a corporate.
Mm.
I mentioned earlier, you think about if you are a bank, you've got to think about risk and compliance.
Yeah.
If you are a bank, you've got to think about security of your environment, your data. There is data that people should just not access. So we have to ensure the security is right. They have to make choices of what products are allowed in their platform, what's not allowed.
Yeah.
They have to think about governance of the data and also of the agents themselves that are being produced. So there's a lot of that where organizations are really thinking about. But where I think companies are yet to spend sufficient time is how to enable the rest of the employees. Because the truth is, a company or an organization that invites its employees into this journey, they are the ones who will really fast track the benefit.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, who does the work?
Yes.
It's the people in the business.
Mm.
So we have this conversation of a frontier organization.
Mm.
What are the characteristics of a frontier? I'm telling you, these are the characteristics of a frontier.
Mm.
Creating an enabling environment, skilling up, and creating vision at the top, enabling the employees so that they know how to, and then building a clear journey for the business. So clarity of thinking, why are we doing this? What value do we want to achieve? How do we do it?
Mm.
And how do we get there?
Big applause.
Thank you.
It's probably the best masterclass in AI I've been to. Explained simply that even I can understand. Vugani, thank you so much. You know, we can go on and on and on, but really for making the time especially in such a busy period. I don't know how many planes you've been on, and really committing to come and share so much nuggets and knowledge that you have with these wonderful future leaders that we have here today.
Thank you for inviting me. Thank you for this amazing audience that you have here.
Yeah.
They've really been fantastic and making me feel like a celebrity of sorts.
You're not getting away that easily. So bonus question before you go. And we always have this. So my researchers, my team, I love them. They pick up these things. I think you did an interview where you suggested that you're afraid of heights. And yet you actually said something brave in that to say, though you're afraid of heights, you want to skydive or scuba dive. Have you done it yet?
I'm not generally afraid of heights. As in, like, you know, if I'm in a tall building, now there are people who can't even look.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not that.
Yeah.
But I shiver when I have to jump off an aircraft.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So this is on my bucket list.
Bucket list, eh?
Yes.
Oh, fantastic. I love the attitude, though, that, you know, confront your fears.
But I've been in paraglide. Yes.
Yeah, yes, yes.
So that tested my, that stretched me a little bit, but not as far as jumping off an aircraft.
Yeah. I mean, look, even those who are afraid of heights, sitting in a business class in A380, it's not that scary. Thank you so much. And,
thank you.
You've been a lovely audience.
You've been listening to another Solid Gold podcast.